Chapter 9. Diseases of Silkworms. At the beginning of 1865, the epidemic among silkworms had become so acute that the sericultural industry of France was seriously threatened. Eggs, worms, chrysalides and moths were all affected. The trouble was characterized by the presence of a microscopic object called the vibrant corpuscle, or corpuscle of Cornelia, after the scientist who first observed it, while the malady became popularly known as pebrine, from the patois word pebre, pepper. It appears to have been through the advocacy of Dumas that Pasteur was appointed by the Minister of Agriculture to investigate the matter, and no one can have attended a popular lecture on the subject without being informed that Pasteur's work redeemed for his country more money than the war indemnity wrung from France by the Germans after 1870. What really happened was that Pasteur's luck stood him in extraordinarily good stead. For had Professor Bechamp not provided him with the solution to the silkworm mystery, a very different story might have been told. Nothing better illustrates the acuteness of Bechamp's intellect than the rapidity with which he solved the cause of pebrine and suggested a preventive. Although he was entirely unassisted and obliged to defray any expenses out of his own pocket, already in the year 1865 he was able to state that pebrine was a parasitical disease, and that creosote could be used to prevent the attack of the parasite. Meantime, however, Pasteur had been entrusted by the government with the official investigation of the silkworm problems, and no one who understands anything of departmental red tape will wonder that, instead of at once accepting Bechamp's verdict, agricultural societies waited to hear the pronouncement of the official representative. Plenty of patience had to be exercised. Pasteur arrived on his mission at Alais in June 1865, having, as he stated before long in his note to the Academy of Science, no serious title, to his fresh employment owing to his ignorance of the subject. "I have never even touched a silkworm," he had written previously to Dumas. The perusal of an essay on the history of the worm by quatrophages comprised his study up to June 1865. Yet, as some statement was expected from him, he managed to put together a submission to the Academy of Science on the 25th of September of the same year, in which he provided the following extraordinary description. "The corpuscles are neither animal nor vegetable, but bodies more or less analogous to cancerous cells or those of pulmonary tuberculosis. From the point of view of a methodic classification, they should rather be compared to globules of pus, or globules of blood, or even granules of starch, rather than to infusoria or molds. They do not appear to be free, as many authors think, in the body of the animal, but well contained in the cells. It is the chrysalides, rather than the worm, that one should try to submit to proper remedies." One may well appreciate that such a description evoked ridicule from Professor Bechamp, who scornfully wrote, "This chemist, who is occupying himself with fermentation, has not even begun to decide whether or not he is dealing with a ferment." What Pasteur had done, however, was to give a detailed description that was wrong in every particular. There for a considerable time he left the matter, while the deaths of his father and two of his daughters intervened, and he was invited as a guest to spend a week with the Emperor and Empress at the Palace of Compiègne. Napoleon III, we are told, was deeply interested in science. At any rate, he and the Empress listened patiently to Pasteur's discourses. The latter was not only brought into close contact with eminent diplomats and the shining lights of art and literature, but was singled out from among these celebrities for special imperial favors. His silkworm perplexities were confided to Eugenie, and she encouraged him to fresh endeavors. Limelight is invariably thrown upon those smiled upon by imperial personages, and so it is easy to understand the increasing deference that began to be shown to Pasteur by most of his peers. As regards the silkworm diseases, instead of being watchful for the correct verdict, the world at large merely waited to hear what Pasteur had to say on the subject. In February 1866, Pasteur again left for that part of France then suffering from the trouble, and this time fortified himself with the company of scientific assistants. The government again gave all the help possible, and the Minister of Public Instruction granted special leave of absence to a Professor Jamez at the College of Louis Le Grand, so that he might be free to help Pasteur. Yet in spite of all this assistance, and notwithstanding extra early rising, his biographer has to admit that the results Pasteur arrived at were being much criticized. His actual pronouncements his son-in-law has wisely passed over, and instead has introduced various topics to divert the attention of the reader who might persist in asking, what was Pasteur's solution to the silkworm mystery? Fortunately, we can find the exact answers in the reports of the French Academy of Science. The first one to turn to, however, is a note not by Pasteur, but by Professor Bechamp, dated the 18th of June 1866. In the midst of his professorial duties and his constant researches on other matters, Bechamp snatched time to send to the Academy fuller details of the disease pebrine and measures for preventing it. His note was entitled On the Harmlessness of the Vapors of Creosote in the Rearing of Silkworms. He repeated the pronouncement he had made the previous year, and clearly stated, "The disease is parasitical. Pebrine attacks the worms at the start from the outside and the germs of the parasite come from the air. The disease, in a word, is not primarily constitutional." He went on to explain how he developed the eggs, or the seeds as they are called, of the silkworms in an enclosure in which the odor of creosote was produced from a very minute dose of the drug. The eggs thus hatched were all free from pebrine. As Professor Bechamp never committed himself to statements until he had proof positive, we find in this verdict upon pebrine the decisive clearness that characterizes all his opinions. Pasteur was still so much in the dark that he had not even the acumen to gauge the correctness of Bechamp's views. But this note of Bechamp's was, no doubt, a trial to him. Here was another worker pronouncing upon a subject that had been officially relegated to him by the Empress. Accordingly, on the 23rd of July 1866, Pasteur unburdened himself of a statement to the Academy of Science on the nature of pebrine. It was entitled New Studies on the Disease of Silkworms. And here we must look for the great discovery said to have been provided by Pasteur for the salvation of sericulture. It was this: the healthy moth is the moth free from corpuscles, the healthy seed is that derived from moths without corpuscles. Such an obvious conclusion is laughable. Still, as it could not be condemned as actually being incorrect, it would have been just as well for Pasteur to have ventured no further. Instead, he proceeded, "I am very much inclined to believe that there is not an actual disease of silkworms. I cannot better make clear my opinion of silkworm disease than by comparing it to the effects of pulmonary phthisis. My observations of this year have fortified me in the opinion that these little organisms are neither animalcules nor cryptogamic plants. It appears to me that it is chiefly the cellular tissue of all the organs that is transformed into corpuscles or produces them." Not a single proof did he bring forward of a fact that would, if true, have been marvelous. Not a single suggestion did he give of any experiment to determine the asserted absence of life in the corpuscle or their relation to the disease. Finally, he went out of his way to contradict Bechamp, and in so doing set a definite seal on his blunder. One would be tempted to believe, especially from the resemblance of the corpuscles to the spores of Mucorrhina, that a parasite had invaded the nurseries. That would be an error. This intentional dig at another worker was singularly unlucky, for it provides proof of Pasteur's rebuttal of a correct solution, one to which he afterwards laid claim. Here was the man who had so utterly renounced his former spontaneous views as to ascribe all fermentative effects, all vital phenomena, to airborne causes, now denying the extraneous origin of a disease that was proved by Bechamp to be undoubtedly parasitic. Bechamp at once fortified his conclusions with an account of the experiments upon which he had based them. On the 13th of August 1866, he presented a note to the Academy of Science, Researches on the Nature of the Prevailing Disease of Silkworms. In this he described a process of washing the seeds and worms, which gave proof that those affected had been invaded by a parasite. In answer to Pasteur, he declared that the vibrant corpuscle is not a pathological production, something analogous to a globule of pus, or a cancer cell, or to pulmonary tubercles, but is distinctly a cell of a vegetable nature. Again, on the 27th of August, another note to the Academy described experiments that proved the vibrant corpuscle to be an organized ferment. Later, on the 4th of February of the following year, 1867, a new memoir sent to the Academy detailed more experiments that not only showed the corpuscle to be a ferment, but also that after the inversion of sugar, fermentation went on, producing alcohol, acetic acid and another non-volatile acid. In January, 1867, Pasteur, who had been away, returned to Alais, apparently at last enlightened by Professor Bechamp's explanations. In a letter to Derouet, the Minister of Public Instruction, he seems to have started to claim for himself credit for solving the mystery of the silkworm trouble. This would account for the plea put forward by Beauchamp for recognition of his outstanding priority in providing a correct scientific explanation. On 29 April 1867, Beauchamp provided the Academy of Science with an even fuller account in which he stated his opinion that the vibrant corpuscle was a spore, and demonstrated that it multiplied in an infusion of dead worms, chrysalides and moths, and that creosote diminished this multiplication. He added to this note a plate of designs of the microscopic examination of this reproduction of corpuscles. He added, "Thus is completed the parasitic theory of Pebrine, for the triumph of which I have struggled for nearly 2 years. I venture to hope that the priority of the idea and of the experiments that have demonstrated it will not be disputed." He showed that up to the previous August, he had been alone in holding his opinion, with the exception of M. Le Ric de Monchy, to whom he expressed gratitude for his encouragement and able assistance. Unfortunately for Beauchamp, Pasteur was devoid of the habit of rendering due honor. Convinced against his will by the professor's irrefutable proofs, there was nothing for him to do but turn a complete about-face, as he had done before when Beauchamp had incontestably proved the erroneousness of belief in spontaneous generation. On the same date, the 29th of April 1867, we find among the reports of the Academy of Science a letter from Pasteur to Dumas, dated Alais, the 24th of April. In this letter, Pasteur feebly excused his mistake on the grounds that he had held his erroneous view in good company with many persons of great repute, and he also pleaded the impossibility of recognizing the mode of reproduction of the corpuscles. Instead of any acknowledgement to Professor Beauchamp for his revelations, Pasteur coolly expressed the hope that he himself would soon be able to present an almost complete study of the disease. His omission to do so then and there seems noteworthy proof of a continued want of clear understanding. We find among the reports of the 20th of May 1867, a letter addressed to the President of the Academy of Science by Beauchamp, dated the 13th of May, on the subject of Pasteur's communication of the previous April. He pointed out the error of Pasteur's former views, and asserted his own priority in discovering the true nature of the corpuscles and their mode of reproduction. On the same date he brought forward new facts to help the history of the prevailing disease of silkworms and the nature of the vibrant corpuscle. Here he claimed that the corpuscles were airborne and to be found on mulberry leaves, the greatest care therefore being necessitated in the preparation of leaves destined for the food of the worms. But the most noteworthy fact in this memoir is that Beauchamp identified another silkworm disease in addition to Pebrine. Observations had already been made by the naturalist Joly of the presence of vibrios in the intestinal canal of sick worms, to which the name of Mort's flats or restes petites had been given, but as much ignorance prevailed in regard to this disease, which came to be known as flatulence, as had existed over Pebrine. On the 11th of the previous April, Professor Beauchamp had already published a pamphlet on this second silkworm disease, and afterwards, in July 1868, forwarded his account to the Academy of Science, which inserted a reference to it. In this pamphlet he wrote, "A non-corpuscular seed may and often does contain, as observed by de Monchy and by me, other products besides the spherules of the vitellus and the fatty globules. They are the motile points, much smaller than all the others that surround them, and often excessively numerous. We call these motile points microzyma aglii temporarily, until we determine positively their significance. To sum up, as long as their parents are unknown, the best course will be to procure seed only that is not corpuscular, either internally or externally, and that is free from the microzyma aglii." In his communication of the 20th of May he went further in his description, and showed that in this other disease the vibrant corpuscles might be entirely absent, while, instead, motile particles were noticeable, like those he had observed in chalk and equally minute, and on these he now bestowed the name Microzyma bombicis, on account of the way in which they were coupled two by two, like a figure of eight. The next reports that we find on the subject of silkworm disease are on the 3rd of June 1867. They are two letters from Pasteur, addressed to Dumas. Regarding the first, Pasteur has to make a curious explanation. It is dated, Alais, the 30th of April, and in a note Pasteur says that this letter left Alais on the 4th of May and that by a postal error it only reached Dumas on the 22nd of May. Be that as it may, the 30th of April is, anyway, posterior to the 11th of April, when Professor Beauchamp had put forward his first explanation of flatulence. Neither does Pasteur in his letter do more than allude to the corpuscular malady as not being the only torment of sericulture. As a precaution against pebrine, he put forward his system of taking seed only from moths free from corpuscles, which, as Bechamp pointed out, was an absurdity, considering the parasitic nature of the complaint and the fact that the parasites abounded on mulberry leaves. The other letter to Dumas, published on 3 June 1867, was dated, Alais, 21 May. Here Pasteur stated that another trouble was often wrongly confused with pebrine, because in a great number of cases the two diseases had no connection, or at least not directly. Considering the complete disparity of the two complaints, as already shown by Bechamp, the vibrant corpuscles being often entirely absent in the case of flatulency, this comment of Pasteur's is noteworthy as showing that he did not possess his rival's comprehension of the subject. Bechamp, meanwhile, worked hard and sent to the Commission on Sericulture a memoir entitled On the Transformation of the Vibrant Corpuscle of Pebrine and on the Nature of the Disease called Restes Petites. This important communication the Academy of Science published only an abstract on 10 June 1867, while on 1 July of the same year the Academy published another memoir, also first sent by Bechamp to the Commission on Sericulture, and entitled On the Sacrification of the Vibrant Corpuscle of Pebrine. Here he gave a full description of the corpuscle, showing it to lose its oscillating movement in a solution of caustic potash, but to be insoluble in this liquid. He found it to be soluble in sulfuric acid on boiling, and proved that glucose could be produced from it by successive treatment with sulfuric acid, barium carbonate, alcohol and water, and came to the conclusion that the vibrant particle contains cellulose. From Pasteur, the official inquirer into the diseases of silkworms, the reports of the Academy of Science provide no further communication on the subject for almost a year. From Bechamp, on the contrary, a series of memoirs show the way in which his detailed, persevering work on microorganisms led to his final comprehension of the silkworm disease called flatulency. He had already, on 2 April 1867, sent up a note to the Academy on microscopic organisms in saliva. The matter was so new and unexpected that only a resume was given. On 24 February 1868, he sent up a note on the molecular granulations, microzymas, of ferments and of animal tissues. Here he drew attention to the microorganisms to be found in vaccine virus, a plagiarized confirmation of which was given by Chauveau. On 2 March 1868, he sent a note on the molecular granulations, microzymas, of the cells of the liver. On 4 May 1868, he submitted On the Origin and Development of Bacteria. This was a general demonstration of bacterial development from the anatomically elemental microzymas. It was on 8 June 1868, that he applied all the preceding facts to the disease of flatulency in a note titled On the Microzymian Disease of Silkworms. Here he stated flatulency to be hereditary, owing to the abnormal development of the inherent elemental microzymas of the silkworm. He showed that the microzymas might be seen singly or associated in chaplets, or in the form of very small bacteria. To see them, a very high power of the microscope was needed. He stated that the microscopes supplied to workers by the government were not strong enough. He showed that microzymas and bacteria might exist in the same worm, but it appeared worthy of attention that the number of microzymas was in an inverse ratio to that of the bacteria. It was useless to take seed from moths with the complaint, which was distinguishable by an examination of the contents of the abdomen. He pointed out that to isolate the microzymas, they should be treated with a preparation of caustic potash, which, dissolving everything else, would leave the elemental microorganisms. Thus, as he had at first fully explained the cause and the mode of prevention of pebrine, so now Professor Bechamp made an equally clear and complete explanation of the second silkworm disease, flatulency. He showed that, unlike pebrine, it was not caused by an extraneous parasitic invasion, but was due to an abnormal unhealthy development of the microzymas in the body cells of the silkworms. The sericultural troubles had thus given him a chance to demonstrate his full understanding of disease conditions. He was able to provide a clear exposition of, on the one hand, a parasitic complaint, and on the other of one due not to a foreign agent, but to a diseased status of anatomical elements. Pasteur was well acquainted with all the notes published by Bechamp, but, regrettably to say, had not the generosity to offer praise for his rival's scientific triumph. It is undeniable that his thought was of himself, and how he could best vindicate his own pretensions. Beauchamp's explanation of flatulency appeared, as we have shown, among the reports of the Academy of Science on 8 June 1868. On 29 June the reports include a letter to Dumas from Pasteur dated 24 June 1868. Here, it is extraordinary to find that he actually dared to claim that he had been the first to draw attention to this second silkworm disease and distinguish it from pebrine. But no doubt realizing that the Academy reports were destitute of any such proof, he demanded the insertion of the full text of a note that he claimed to have sent on 1 June 1868, to the Agricultural Society of Alais. It was duly inserted with Pasteur's letter, and was entitled Note on the Silkworm Disease commonly known as, Morts Blancs or, Morts Flats. A perusal of these communications by Pasteur leaves one marveling that he was able to impose upon the world the idea that it was he who had elucidated the diseases of silkworms. Just as he had been astray in regard to pebrine, so, even now after all the time he had been at work, he had nothing valuable to say about flatulency. He referred to the organisms associated with the disease without any allusion to the fact that Joly of the Faculty of Science of Toulouse, as well as Professor Beauchamp, had observed them long before him. He thought there was nothing to show that these organisms caused the complaint, but that they were the result of digestive trouble. He wrote, "The intestine, no longer functioning, for some unknown reason, the materials it encloses are situated as though inside an immovable vessel." Beauchamp, naturally, felt obliged to answer Pasteur, and so among the reports of the French Academy of Science, on 13 July 1868, we find a note from the professor titled On the Microzymian Disease of Silkworms, in regard to a recent communication from M. Pasteur. Here, Beauchamp refers to his previous pamphlet, published on 11 April 1867, in which he and Loric de Monchy had drawn attention to the organisms associated with Morts Flats. He refers to his past communication of 13 May, published among the Academy reports of 20 May, and also to his note of 10 June 1867. He shows how again on 28 March 1868, he published a second edition of his pamphlet, to which he added further opinions on the microzymian complaint, otherwise flatulency. He also draws attention to the fact that as far back as 4 July 1867, a member of the silkworm industry had written to ask to be allowed to visit him at Montpellier to study the disease. Pasteur responded by calling M. Rabolange to his help, only for the latter to confess that he had visited Montpellier for the desired object. Yet such was the fear of offending the government representative, the man honored by imperial patronage, that M. Rabolange, all the same, championed Pasteur with flattery and ridiculed the microzymas. Beauchamp replied to Rabolange on 17 August 1868, reminding him of the table of designs that had accompanied his note of 8 June 1867. No one replied. As Beauchamp afterwards said, the Academy might submit to plagiarism, but no one could deny it. No doubt it was the total inability to set aside Beauchamp's just claims that made Pasteur so hate his brilliant rival from this time henceforward. Beauchamp's extraordinary success in dealing with the silkworm diseases was all the more remarkable because he had no help, pecuniary or otherwise, from the government, and no time to expend on the problem except what he could snatch from a professorial career already filled with work quite apart from any of his scientific researches. Pasteur, on the other hand, had government help at his disposal, every expense defrayed and scientific assistance. Moreover, he was given complete leisure to carry out his researches. That another should have so profoundly succeeded where he had failed must have been a source of bitterness to him, and his jealousy led him into a veritable persecution of Beauchamp. He was sure of his own position, which had the highest influence to back it, and we may be certain that he did not allow himself to pass from the memory of his imperial patrons. He commenced his book on vinous fermentation with a foreword to the emperor, while a dedication to the empress in the same way prefaced his book on the disease of silkworms. We may search in vain through this for any generous reference to the first elucidator of these troubles. Instead, he takes all the credit to himself and even goes out of his way to deride Beauchamp's arguments in favor of creosote as a preventive. But there is truth in the American dictum that you may fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but never all of the people all of the time, and so Pasteur's selfish claims must completely fail in face of the scientific reports to which we have given reference, and which are available to anyone, for instance, in the library of the British Museum. These incontestably prove that the man who made such gains for France in regard to aniline dyes was also the man who provided his country with the correct diagnosis of the silkworm diseases and suggested methods of prevention. Unfortunately, practical measures were left to Pasteur, and the best commentary upon them are facts in regard to the sericultural industry put forward by Dr. Loutaud, one at one time editor of the Journal de Médecine de Paris. At the commencement of the silkworm trouble, about 1850, we are told that France produced annually about 30 million kilograms of cocoons. In 1866-67, the production had sunk to 15 million kilograms. After the introduction of Pasteur's preventive method, production diminished from 8 million kilograms in 1873 to even as low as 2 million kilograms of cocoons in certain subsequent years. Dr. Loutaud wrote, "That is the way in which Pasteur saved sericulture. The reputation which he still preserves in this respect among ignoramus and the short-sighted has been brought into being first, by himself, by means of inaccurate assertions. Second, by the sellers of microscopic seeds on the Pasteur system, who have realized big benefits at the expense of the cultivators. And third, by the complicity of the academies and public bodies, which, without any investigation, reply to the cultivators, but sericulture is saved. Make use of Pasteur's system. However, not everybody is disposed to employ a system that consists of enriching oneself by the ruination of others." Perhaps the greatest harm occasioned by Pasteur's jealousy was the barrier he set up to any notice being taken of Bechamp's work, particularly in regard to his cell doctrine and microzymian theories. So much effort did Pasteur put into flouting these ideas that members of the Academy, influenced by friendly motives, actually begged Professor Bechamp to drop the very use of the word microzyma. Thus the misfortune came about that, instead of being encouraged, science was held back, and at every turn Bechamp found himself hampered in the work that should have laid the foundations of cytology and physiology, and elucidated the processes of the anatomical elements in birth and life, in health and disease, in death and in disruption.